Well, hello, and a very warm welcome back to the Andrew Eborn Show. My favourite part of this show is a little episode we call the Pair of Briefs, and there's a reason for that because everybody loves a good pun. And I'm joined by my very good friend, Steve Barrett. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Well, every day's a weekend, really. We know, it's what you do is like looking forward to Christmas. We love it. And now the cartoon I brought up, that was from Jay Bright from the 18th century. It's the one that they always show when they're talking about litigation. And what it does, it shows a cow, and it shows the plaintiff pulling the horns of the cow, the defendant pulling the tail, and the lawyer milking it. Because litigation is horrendously expensive. It is a last resort. But I thought it'd be helpful just to talk through, because this is your, not just your bread and butter, you are an expert litigator, to talk us through the process for the different courts and the different levels that there are, and also what people can expect in that sort of situation. So let's start off with the two types of courts, and a lot of it's to do with monetary size, isn't it?
Yes. So you mean the difference between the counter courts and the High Court?
That's right, the £100,000 effectively.
Well, no. So throughout my lifetime, access to justice has just got worse. And I don't like this fact because I think that access to civil justice is crucial to keeping a society going. There's a very interesting academic paper by an anthropologist on why do Southern Italy and Afghanistan respectively allow or tolerate the mafia and tolerate the Taliban. And the theory postulated is that as bad as they are, and particularly the Taliban, because they're pretty awful, they at least allow business to be conducted because what they offer is a cheap and effective means of business dispute resolution. So you go and see your local Taliban tribe leader, and he picks which businessman wins if there's a contract dispute. Now, it might be a pretty rough system, but it works. And that's why they tolerate these and why they're allowed to thrive. And if you look at a human society, it must offer the means of resolving disputes, particularly between business people. That's, really where it comes up time and again. But I also think that for a civilized society, it also offer a cheap and effective dispute resolution for everybody. If you buy a house with somebody because you fall desperately in love with them, but you don't get married, then the state really ought to offer you a dispute resolution mechanism when you fall out and want to sell the house that you can afford and that you can use. And I'm not really sure it does. And let me explain probably the single greatest wrong of my lifetime that I can think of happening, which is a direct breach of Magna Carta. So Magna Carta has been literally torn up and thrown in the loo. Not only, by the way, did we do this, but whilst we were doing this, I was having lots of glasses of champagne as all the judges in the judiciary celebrated the 800th birthday of Magna Carta. So the very year that we did this in, we were nonetheless toasting it and celebrating it. But let me explain that to viewers. Magna Carta says that the state, the country, must not sell access to justice for profit. Okay, that's very, very clear. We're all supposed to get access to justice, and it's supposed to be on a non-profit basis. That's what we're supposed to do. And this is what they did in 2015. They brought in the idea that you would pay a fixed fee of 10% of your claim, or exceeding that, capped at £10,000. So all of my clients tend to pay £10,000. Now, that is ridiculous. They admitted it cost about 1,600 quid to run the courts. So the Treasury is literally creaming the rest off as profit. But if you can, I mean, you started out by saying litigation can be ruinously expensive. Well, if you've got a claim worth over £100,000, then you're going to have to pay £10,000 just to issue in a court, which really is a disgrace because the court is doing nothing more than stamping the documents you filled in and then sending them out to the other side. 10 grand. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. But I'm afraid that's part of litigation getting more and more expensive and people getting further away from the courts. And when I corrected you earlier, and I didn't mean to be rude, Andrew,
Oh,
but
you're never rude. It's good because it helps to dispel all those myths and so on and so forth. But carry on.
Well, I just want to show you the difference between reality. So, so you're a good lawyer, so you know the rules say that if it's £100,000 or more, then it needs to go to the High Court. But that is the most broken rule in civil procedure. And
Right.
I can happily confirm to you that I had a case for 1.5 million, which was issued in the High Court, and the High Court kicked it down to the County Court without even telling us, without having a hearing. That's so far beyond 100,000. And that's now normal. That's what happens. In order to stay in the High Court, really, now you need about 2.5, probably 3 million. Just because otherwise they are so busy and there are so few judges that they can't deal with the volume of work they've got. So that becomes the most breached rule because they just keep kicking stuff down to the county courts,
But
meaning
so
that.
to help people out on this then, if they have a claim, how should they start it? Because that used to be the rule, didn't it? It was like county court, 100 grand, you worked on that sort of basis. If it's anything over than that, you go to the High Court. What should they now be doing?
Well, they should consider the county court in the first instance, always, I think. They should be aware that things take an awful lot of time. They should know that there's a trick that many of us use because we just think that this is absolutely abhorrent, this £10,000 fee for profit, which is that wherever we can, that's issuing a full claim where you expect there to be a dispute of fact. If you can argue that there isn't really going to be a lot of disputes of fact, we just need a judge to say what the law is, then you can do something called issue under Part 8. And Part 8 does not have a £10,000 issue fee. It's still expensive, it's a couple of hundred quid, but it's a massive saving. So every professional litigator worth their salt is sat there with a claim going, how can I argue this is Part 8? And some of the judges, because they are good and decent human beings, particularly if they can see that the participants are normal people, will quite often allow you to issue by Part 8 and then go, oh dear, it looks so you've made a terrible mistake here. I think this is probably a Part 7 claim. Anyway, I'll switch it over to Part 7. No need to pay an additional fee. And there is a sort of, it's a, but even this is not sustainable, Andrew. As you can tell, this is a sort of reaction against an inherent wrong in the system. What we really must do is go back and fix the court system because people need access to justice. And the Victoria, there's a theory amongst the senior judges that the way to do this is to offer online courts. They've all looked at something called eBay dispute resolution, and they really like eBay dispute resolution. Now, I'm not thoroughly convinced, and I have, when I was advising a government minister, I took the view that it's really not a good idea to have, cheap AI justice for normal people, and then the billionaires get to have a real judge. I mean, that just to me, I mean, because I'm very Victorian in my way, I don't like gated communities. I don't like the rich cutting themselves off. I think everybody should be living around each other and next to each other and meeting each other, in the pub and in the church, and we should all be together. I don't like this idea that the wealthy go off somewhere and sit over there in Versailles and then treat the poor badly, and then the poor obviously rise up and burn the wealthy to the ground. That's human nature. But we should stop that by everybody living amongst each other. So I don't really like the idea of AI courts. And being a Victorian, I tend to prefer their solutions. So I can explain what they did and how they got cheap access to justice. And what they did was they would take respectable members of the community, they would call them a justice of the peace, not lawyers, they'd call them a justice of the peace. They'd get three of them. Because, one on his own might go mad and get power mad and turn into a total loon. And they'd have them voluntarily sit in courtrooms and resolve disputes for you. And we used to use that mechanism for everything. And when I qualified as a judge, as a barrister, Tony Blair decided that instead we should or there should always be professional judges. So he decided that instead the state would pay one person around £127,000 a year to sit in a courtroom and deliver justice. And that's how most people will experience justice right now. If your viewers, if our viewers, go to court, the most likely thing is that they'll go into a single room. It probably won't have a window. It may have a royal seal. They may have forgotten to put one up. They are supposed to put them up because courts belong to the royal line of power in our country. They don't belong to Parliament. That's the difference between the two. Anyway, they used to be there. They were always there when I was a kid, but increasingly you find modern courtrooms just sort of the designer forgot to put the royal seal on it. But and that's the one everybody should know, DOJ. Dio et mondroyt, God and my law, and the lion and the unicorn and all that. This experiment of having professional judges in a dimly lit room with IKEA furniture, I think it's just proved far too expensive. And it would be much better to go back to a Victorian model where you have three volunteers who are rewarded by an honorific. So if I walk around my market town and I look at all those stones in the wall where people have been, or my child's school or something, you'll always find the letters JP behind the name of the person who's doing it. And really, what we need to get back is two Victorian concepts. One, that we are all involved, so we need to bloody well volunteer. So we do actually need to roll our sleeves up and realize we're in this country together. And the second one is bring back respecting honours and titles, because they don't cost the state anything and they're a good way of motivating people to volunteer. So, we should respect somebody who sits as a magistrate. We should respect somebody who is a justice of the peace. That is a great and noble thing for a person and a human being to be. That's more important than being a celebrity TikToker. We do actually get to choose how we structure our society. We get to choose who we choose to respect. And if we all choose to respect people who volunteer as magistrates again, I think we'll be a slightly better country. And actually, viewers should know that for 13 years, I've mentored kids from poor backgrounds into good universities and into good legal jobs. And one of mine, who, single parent family, absolute benefits all his life, and he volunteered from the age of 19 as a magistrate. And I'm so proud of him because he had nothing. And yet he's volunteering and helping his community and making it better. It was just insanely good of him. There is a lot of good in the world. And we should go back to respecting people who are moral, decent, and good, not people who are famous or willing to take their clothes off.
Great advice. We're currently stuck, however, with the system that we've got. So, talk us through what the process would be, the stages of litigation, because obviously not all cases are the same, but they do generally follow the pattern. Talk to me first of all about pre-action. What happens?
So, in order to reduce claims, the judiciary have created a lot of need for what we call pre-action. And everybody's really supposed to engage in pre-action. And if you don't, you'll get bitten in the bottom later on. What that means is you're supposed to write a letter to the other side, setting out the facts and what you're arguing and what you think has happened. And ideally, offering to meet them for mediation. I suspect at the moment, mediation is still voluntary. To an extent, you are very largely punished if you don't agree to go to a mediation. But I suspect mediation, because the current system is non-sustainable, it's too expensive. I think mediation will become compulsory. It will just become inevitable. Mediation is a much less good outcome system. Litigation is a win-lose outcome system, based upon what's right and true. And that's what litigation should be doing. Mediation is a win-win outcome system. Now, win-win outcome systems have been very popular ever since Tony Blair. Tony Blair is a win-win outcome politician, and his political philosophy is that you can always compromise. It's what I talked to my mate Meyer about the other day. This is Star Trek: The Next Generation. In Star Trek, the original series, you've got win-lose outcomes. Kirk's going to blow you up, okay? He's going to shoot your ship and your ship go bang. Enterprise not go bang, win lose. In Star Trek: The Next Generation, Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard is going to sit down with you, negotiate with you, somehow, find the goodness in your heart and come to a negotiated settlement where everybody flies away and no ships go boom. It's a bit more boring, which is why I think they had to bring the violence back eventually. But it is useful in society. I'm not against win-win outcomes. And what we always say in litigation is that something like 97% of our cases settle. So we're using win-win outcomes really loads of the time, the absolute majority of the time. But one of the reasons I think the country's in the state it's in is that it thinks that win-win outcomes can be used 100% of the time. And they can't, because there are evil people. And evil people won't sit down and negotiate with Captain Picard. They won't. And there are dangerous psychopaths, and there are sociopaths, and they're just wrong ones. So you cannot negotiate with everybody. You cannot. But the governing philosophy of the senior judiciary is that mediation should become compulsory, and I think it will. You just so viewers know, mediation tends to be three. I call it the three room event. So you tend to be in one room, the other side tends to be in another room, and there tends to be a room with the mediator in that you all go to sometimes. You spend a very long day because human beings never settle in the morning. Never. Ne I've never seen it. So I always advise clients to like bring bananas, and I have my solicitor bring snacks and make sure that everybody's blood sugar can stay up because you know it's very draining. By about 4, 5, 6, when everybody wants to go home, you know, that's when people actually start making serious offers and compromises and suggestions. I've had mediations go on till things like 3 in the morning. And that's one where, and I did that deliberately, even though it was ruining my life, because my client was a very sweet little old lady, and it was the other side were her stepchildren, which is quite common. I don't know if people realise, but one of the most common types of dispute or litigation at the moment is what I call second wife versus first daughter, and they tend to fall out once dad is dead. And because that's because usually that's actually not because anybody's evil. Usually that's just because losing dad is really awful and we can't really deal with it. We don't really want it to be true. So I'm just going to scream at you. You know, you're there. So I'm going to not like you because I'm very upset. And that's a very natural human response. But again, if you're what I consider a good barrister, you put extra effort into settling things like that
Yeah. And
because you
actually, as
don't.
you say, the courts actually penalise you if you haven't really complied with these pre-action rules or basically acted unreasonably before you commence proceedings. And they can penalise you with costs and so on and so forth. That's normally the way to do it. But on the basis that you haven't managed to reach this amicable situation, the amicable settlement, the win-win for both sides, talk to me about the litigation being commenced and the issue of the claim form.
So your barrister or solicitor, if you've got lawyers, will fill in a claim form for you. That's usually accompanied by a document called a particulars of claim, which is usually drafted by a barrister because they're quite fiddly. They're quite funny in some of the language that they use. So people watching this will probably know I'm a massive nerd of a lawyer. And when I was at college, I deliberately learned more obscure bits of the law than the mainstream bits of the law, if that makes sense. So I learned about something called the tort of conversion, which most people don't know. They didn't really know the tort of negligence. And I once pleaded conversion, and to my absolute delight, conversion, it's a bit like estoppel, Andrew. I don't know if you know estoppel. When you plead estoppel, you plead these, all you need to know, listeners, is that these are legal things that you
Yes.
can. And when you plead them, you don't actually use the word. So when you plead estoppel, you don't put the word estoppel anywhere in the document. But
Guess what?
because
I'm going
people
to
are,
plead. Absolutely.
but because defense people are largely aware of estoppel, they will go, oh, it's a stop. This is an estoppel
Yes.
claim. Conversion is so relatively obscure that we actually got to the trial, and I gave myself as an argument to the opponent barrister, and she read it, and then she called because these the courts are not very glamorous. You know, she's like 20 meters away, but I can basically hear everything she's saying. She called her instructing solicitor to say, "What on earth is conversion? Because it's not in the pleadings. It was never in any of the, but it's now in my skeleton argument." And she's like, "This is unfair. What have you done?" She actually said to me, "You're ungentlemanly." And this is like, "No, I've pleaded conversion." And the absolute way she went, we went in before this judge, a terribly, terribly nice judge, one of the nicest judge at Central London County Court. He's dead now, but when he died, like people were genuinely sad. I had a mate who's a family lawyer, and she used to take him croissants every morning when she was at his court. He's just a lovely, lovely man. And so she couldn't really, she tried to get angry at him, but he, because he was just so lovely, it didn't really work. And he just went, "Well, look, I'll look through the pleadings. No, I'm afraid Mr. Barrett has pleaded this in an absolute standard way. This is standard chancery pleading for conversion." And so she had to sort of fume off and lose her case. She lost then because he was just like, "So you can either give in now or like this." And she was just like,
So,
"Ah, give in."
for the benefit of those who don't know, talk to us about conversion, then. You say it's a little known pleading.
Yes, it's basically civil theft. So that's basically what the situation arises when you don't want to get the police involved. You just want to get your stuff back or get money in compensation for the stuff that's taken. Now, this was a situation where it was a work laptop and it had proprietary information on it and proprietary software on it. So the company didn't want money back. They wanted the laptop back, which we got an order for. It's called an order called specific performance. So you can go to the courts and get quite interesting outcomes. It doesn't necessarily mean just, you don't just necessarily go to the court because you've paid a builder 50,000 to do something and he's messed it all up. I mean, that's another standard an ordinary person claim, but people are taking things from each other all the time, and if they're quite valuable, you might want to go to court and get them back. The problem with conversion is it's only ever valuable things, so it's only ever usually Ferraris, or in this case business sensitive material. But yes, so you fill in your claim form on your pleadings, your particulars of claim, as they're now called, and you send those off to court, and you pay whatever fee you have to pay, remembering the Part 8 trick if you can get into that. And then the court stamps and sends it out to the other side, along with a standard letter saying you have 14 days to respond. The other side usually then writes back to you saying, "We can't do it in 14 days, give us an extra 4 weeks." To which almost everybody goes, "Yeah, sure, okay." But in theory, when this rule came in, this 14-day rule, the court would deal with it on day 15 if they hadn't responded. But actually, it's going to take at least 6 months before you get anywhere near a courtroom. So the idea of not giving them a few extra weeks just looks completely ridiculous. And what you do, the way that you win in my type of litigation, is what I call the hill of reasonableness. So in war, you win basically till gunpowder. You win if your army's standing on top of the hill. Harold Godwinson almost won at the Battle of 1066, the Battle of Hastings, but stupidly, the Normans feigned a retreat, ran away from the hill, and his idiot soldiers ran after them. If they just stood on the hill, then they would have won. And actually, the Roman success to succeeding in victory was very seldom like how many baddies they killed. It was much more the ability to when their troops did something like that, the Romans blew their whistles and the troops stopped and they did as they were told. So I think a Roman army at 1066 would have won because they would have stayed on that hill when they were ordered to. And if you disobeyed your legion commander, you'd be killed. They would kill for minor infractions just to keep everybody in line in an order. And that gave Rome a massive discipline, massive advantages. They always stay on the hill, stay on the damn hill. It's not rocket science. But the Harold Godwinson's troops left the hill, ran after the Normans. The Normans turned their horses round, and on the flatland, they killed all the Saxons, and the rest is history. But so the message is to stay on the hill. Stay on the hill of reasonableness. Always look reasonable. You win before a British judge by looking reasonable. And I can't tell you, Andrew, how many times I've had this conversation, but I've had it a lot because I tell all of my clients this because it is good advice, and this is how we win. And you want to get to the end of a trial with the judge thinking, "That's the reasonable one. Yeah, that's the reasonable one." And it just gets you endless credit. The worst words you can utter in a British courtroom, the worst thing you can ever tell a judge, ever, is "I'm here on the principle of the thing." Okay?
Right.
So nothing triggers them more. You're basically telling them, "I'm wasting your time, judge." And
Yes.
it really, they get very angry. So never tell a judge that you're fighting something on the principle of the thing. And that's because if you're fighting it, you should be fighting over money because it matters, not just wasting court time.
Yeah.
So, there's like a range of claims. So that's what I mean by conversion has to be valuable things. You wouldn't sue somebody in conversion over a BIC biro unless you really want to get savaged by a judge. I mean, if you are a masochist who loves being shouted at by judges, sue someone over a taken BIC biro. That would just bang go the judge. I mean, that would just. And that, judges do, I mean, they are good people. And the higher up they go, they tend to be much nicer. So I am now in the High Court and I get lovely judges. But I have had experiences with judges. Like I had one who was shouting at me, and it wasn't my fault, it was my client's position, over my client's position. And she was shouting at me for so long. This was in Edmonton County Court. I'm not even sure it's still open, but
Right.
it used to be up in Seven Sisters. And because one thing that you do as a baby barrister is you travel around all these little county courts, so you learn everywhere. I live in a market town and I've been here for work. Something like 15 years ago or 18 years ago or something. But that was my only experience of the town. But anyway, I was up in Edmonton and she shouted at me for so long that I actually remember thinking, "Oh, my back is starting to, oh, I wish I could sit down. She's still shouting at me. Is she still shouting? She's still shouting at me. Oh, this is boring now." You can't actually say any of this. I just have to say, "Yes, I'm great. And I'm great. And I'm blah." And then be polite, because always be polite if you're in litigation. A mate of David Starkey's was in in trouble and needed some help with something. And the most useful advice I gave him last week, they were in court on Monday, was be nice to the judge. Just be nice. Assume the judge is your friend.
And as you say, there's a sort of the best advice is that show that you're following the procedure, show that you're trying to settle. If you haven't managed to settle, then be reasonable, as you say, be on that hill of reasonableness. Going back to the procedure, though, you've got this, you've got the claim form, you've got the brief document that sets out the basis of the claim. The clock is ticking. They then get to talk to me, you get the acknowledgement of service and the reply. Give us your tips on those.
Okay, so the other side will write their defence if they have one. If they won't, they'll concede and you can get judgment in default, which is great. But assuming that they write their defence, then they now have a defence. Then, about 6 months later or 8 months later, you'll get what's called a cost and case management hearing. These are the biggest wastes of money. So I always advise my clients to agree in advance because what you do two things. One is you will get an order from the judge. So if you write the order, send it to the other side, and then you agree it, you don't need to go before a judge. And the other thing you do is you agree what's called a cost schedule, which was one of these many. There are so many. The judges interfere in the litigation market all the time in order to make things cheaper. So far, they have only succeeded in making everything more expensive. So one of the ways that a judge called Lord Justice Jackson thought he would make everything cheaper was by having cost schedules. Now, what never occurred to Lord Justice Jackson is that the solicitors would have to spend a lot, counsel would have to spend a large amount of time filling these things in and therefore incurring extra costs. And that they might have to go to court to argue over them, therefore incurring extra costs. But in his mind, seeing the cost of the litigation set out before them would cause more people to settle, and therefore this would be an inherent good. There has been absolutely no evidence that it's increased settlement rates. Settlement rates were already pretty high, actually, already. People tend to settle. It's inevitable. I'm not sure that these sort of psychological tricks actually work. But anyway, you have to fill in a cost schedule. Again, if you can get that agreed without a hearing, that saves you the hearing. So what you can then do, if you get to the other side and agree all this, you write to the judge, the court, and say, look, we've agreed everything. Here's the draft order. We don't need a hearing, do we? And then the judge will, 99 times out of 100, stamp, 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 and you don't need a hearing. It's the easiest way to save money on me. And I
And
always.
so just to unpack that for people so they understand, when you talk about this, so what does it actually mean? What are you actually agreeing to?
Well, you would agree to their schedule and you'd ask them to agree yours. And the cost schedule is supposed to be the entire life of the litigation. And bear in mind that a piece of litigation can take about 2 years, 2.5 years before you get to trial. So from issuing the form to trial, it can be about two and a half, maybe even 3 years. And what the cost schedules does is set out that entire period. So in that period, you'll spend X amount on solicitors and you'll spend X amount on barristers because there'll be this hearing, there'll be that hearing, the trial will be this long, it will involve this many witnesses, I will, do this, 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 and this, and get it all done. You should never agree one that's ridiculous, but there's levels of reasonableness. There was a lot about, so when I did this thing, or whether other things, people get outraged at how much lawyers cost. But when you're used to how much lawyers cost, you tend not to get outraged by things. It's like lawyers just cost a lot of money. And people, probably viewers don't know, but I've spent most of my 21 years of qualified life trying to talk people out of spending money on me.
Yes.
And one of the and I'm trying to encourage settlement wherever it's possible. But I've got several solicitors who are like, I need you on this case. Why? Because I need it to settle. And it's and it'll always it's one who's got a lovely heart. He's a Christian and he's terribly sweet, and he's a good man. He looked after my kid. He's just a terribly decent person. And he finds these people and he's always like, they haven't got enough money to pay us. We need to settle. We need them to get them to settle. We can't ruin these people's lives. They don't need litigation. And he literally will call me and ask me to do stuff. I literally did one for him just not very long ago, and we did settle. And it was, great. And he was like, well, what's the strategy to get this one to settle? And because I want people to settle for their own good.
Yeah,
I mean, I spent an awful.
that it has to be right, and it is that sort of understanding, and what we sort of urge everybody to look at is that sort of understanding that the system now is designed to make people try and reach an agreement, so that you don't have to come to the court, so you don't have to confirm Jay Bright's brilliant cartoon about the lawyers being the only one who benefit. When we come back, we're going to be looking at evidence and how that works, talking all about disclosure. But for now, Stephen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.